Good afternoon. You're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, praised by the international press after a successful visit to the United States, is an emboldened Enda Kenny planning to stay on as Taoiseach for a while longer? And will his Fine Gael colleagues allow him? A nation once again, a united Ireland is back on the agenda, but can unionists ever be convinced despite the uncertainty of Brexit? And was Michael Noonan treated unfairly by the Public Accounts Committee in their report about NAMA's asset sale in Northern Ireland? All that to come in the next hour, but first it's time for the news now with John Finnerty. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne, and you're very welcome to get in touch with us over the course of the next hour with a comment or a question. You can text 51551, email saturday@rte.ie, and on Twitter it's @SaturdayRTE. Joining me today in the studio, we have Paolo Tobin, who's Sinn Féin TD, Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil TD, Colm Brophy, Fine Gael TD, Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Irish Examiner, Noel Whelan, barrister and columnist with the Irish Times. And I'm going to go straight to the phone line now and to Kevin Doyle, who is political editor with Independent News and Media. And Kevin is still in New York. He covered the visit of Enda Kenny to the United States. You say today, Kevin, that the Taoiseach must be feeling smug today. Tell me why.
Yeah, I think, Claire, he managed, certainly from an American's perspective, he managed to balance the whole trip very well, because for a large part on the day that he actually went to the White House, it was looking like it was going to be a political disaster for him, because it was so fawning. The arrival at the White House, they were best friends. Donald Trump was going around talking about how he was great people and my new best friend. And then when he eventually got to Capitol Hill, he landed that speech on Donald Trump that just kind of found the right balance between having a friendly approach to him and actually telling him what I think people wanted him to say. So in what was a very delicate position, the Taoiseach actually managed to get Donald Trump on side, but also to deliver the message I think that most people wanted him to give.
OK, this is the Friends of Ireland lunch where Enda Kenny made his statement on immigration. We can have a listen to some of that now.
It's fitting that we gather here each year to celebrate St. Patrick and his legacy. He too, of course, was an immigrant. And though he is, of course, the patron saint of Ireland for many people around the globe, he's also a symbol of, indeed, the patron of immigrants. Here in America, new great country, 35 million people claim Irish heritage, and the Irish have contributed to the economic, social, political, and cultural life of this great country over the last 200 years. Ireland came to America because, deprived of liberty, deprived of opportunity, of safety, of even food itself, the Irish believed. And 4 decades before Lady Liberty lifted her lamp, we were the wretched refuse on the teeming shore. We believed in the shelter of America, in the compassion of America, in the opportunity of America. We came and we became Americans. We lived the words of John F. Kennedy long before he uttered them. We asked not what America could do for us, but what we could do for America, and we still do.
Kevin, was there any discernible discomfort for Donald Trump during that?
Well, it was interesting. I was trying to get a good, clear view of his facial expressions, and he was nodding and had, I suppose you could call it, a smile, whether it was a genuine smile or not. Is another thing, but the Taoiseach actually began that speech by mocking Donald Trump, which in itself is a brave move, because Trump had just spoken before that, making the point, talking about the great connections between Ireland and America and all the things that you would expect the President to say at such an event. And the Taoiseach got up and said, I think the Irish can bring change, and I think I've just seen some change. Did the President just read entirely from his script? And there was an awkward pause, I'd say, for about 2 seconds. Then Trump started to laugh, and then the whole room started to laugh.
So is that what it's like, Kevin, when you're dealing with Donald Trump, that you have to take the cue from him? You know, is he one of those powerful people who dominate a room, even though, as we know, lots of people who were at that event probably weren't really on his side as such?
No, I mean, the Friends of Ireland lunch is a bit of everybody. It's some of the most powerful people on Capitol Hill, and then it's some other invited guests like Gerry Adams and Ian Paisley Jr. So it's quite the mix of people there. But there was definitely a sense that all eyes were on Donald Trump. He was sitting beside Fionnuala Kenny and Paul Ryan, the Republican House Speaker, while the Taoiseach was at the podium. And there was definitely a sense that everything the Taoiseach said, people looked to Donald Trump for that. Except, I would say, Claire, during that section of the speech that you played out there, because one of the people I caught their eye during that was Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat speaker, and she was almost bouncing in her chair, to be honest, as the Taoiseach was speaking, and that I think will probably have emboldened the Taoiseach. But Trump didn't fall out over it, and that was the risk the Taoiseach took, because it was later in the evening. The Stanmark ceremony actually happened after that event, so Mr. Kenny had to go back to the White House later in the evening. Donald Trump was there at the back door of the White House to welcome him again, and they paused briefly for photographs with Mr. Kenny didn't say anything, but Donald Trump shouted across to us on the lawn, the White House lawn, that these were great people, he shouted twice before bringing them back in. So obviously he wasn't that offended
by it. There
was
no fallout. So listen, tell me about then Enda Kenny speaking after he marched in the New York City parade, saying that he had things to do, important things to do when he got back from the United States. He arrived back this morning and he spoke about Brexit and the political situation in Northern Ireland, seemingly signalling that he's not quite ready to go yet.
Yeah, two things happened, I suppose, around the leadership issue. The biggest, I suppose, faux pas of the week was around the leadership issue, and they always knew this was going to come up on the Washington trip, was that speech that he was supposed to give where they issued an embargoed copy of it, in which he gave the first public acknowledgement that he was about to step down as Taoiseach, and then 90 minutes later issued another one where it was taken out, and the Taoiseach was quite angry when we asked him about it, saying that, well, that was never the speech I approved. So that in itself was interesting as to what was happening behind the scenes, that the Taoiseach pulled that. Then in New York yesterday, it was the obvious question to ask at this stage. I mean, there was two questions for him. One was, why did you invite Donald Trump? Because that was probably the thing that's upset most people. And number two was, when are you going to step down as leader? And he brought in the issue of Northern Ireland. Now, very few people expect the Northern Ireland situation to be resolved within the 3 weeks deadline that's set. Mr. Kenny said, you know, that's far more important than anything to do with a Fine Gael leadership. We need leadership in Northern Ireland. And he also talked about, it's expected Theresa May now is going to visit Belfast next week. The Brexit Article 50 has been pushed back a bit. So it did sound very much like he was trying to buy time, that he was finding more reasons, I suppose, to say these are things that are far more important than Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney getting my job.
Okay, but you say that he'll have to deal with a party hungry for blood, and we'll ask Colin Brophy about this in just a moment, but do you think the push will come on in earnest now next week when we get back to business?
Well, the next Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting is on Wednesday, and there was an expectation that, well, the Taoiseach created the expectation by saying that he'd deal with this issue conclusively when he got home. He's back on Irish soil now, so the question is, what's he going to do? I think there are some within the party who came very close to putting down a motion of no confidence a few weeks back. The Taoiseach basically asked them, look, let me go to Washington. Don't send me over there with this hanging over my head. I'll deal with it when I come back. Now it sounds like, from what he said yesterday, that he's going to be saying, well, let me deal with Northern Ireland first and before I deal with this, because that's more important. And I'm not sure that's going to wash with a lot of the backbenchers.
What do you think, Colm? The long goodbye? Has the party the stomach for that?
Well, I think the Taoiseach showed excellent judgment in saying to the party at the parliamentary party meeting, which I was at, that he wanted to go to the States. He did not want to have anything hanging over him going out to the States. He wanted to be able to go out to the States as the Taoiseach to represent the country. I think he's done an excellent job on his trip in doing that. He has said he'll come back. He said he'll make a statement to the parliamentary party.
I think he wasn't going to come back.
I think everyone is delighted he did such a good job out there, and everyone's waiting for him to come back and make that statement. And I don't think anybody's prejudging anything until we actually hear from him.
Yeah, but he did give an indication in what he said to reporters in New York that he plans to stay on for a lot longer than perhaps we might have expected.
Well, I'm only a year as a TD, and what I've learnt in that year is that I wait to hear directly from the Taoiseach when he comes in and addresses the parliamentary party as to what his intentions are. There was an awful lot of speculation and what if and what might be said by him, etc. When he came in to address the last meeting of the parliamentary party, he is very, very good at making his intentions very clear. He's also doing a very, very good job at the moment. I think this trip has been a huge success for him. But we're just going to wait and let him do exactly what he said, which is to come back and talk to the parliamentary party on Wednesday. And no one, I think, is going to prejudge anything or make any decisions or comments prior to that.
Well, it's a little bit bizarre, I think, and most of us would find that. Now, the matter of the leadership of Fine Gael is a matter for Fine Gael. And
Fianna Fáil would be pretty interested, though.
Well, I think all of us are interested in how a government actually operates. And are we going to go through another 4, 8, 10, 12 weeks of complete and utter fixation on who's going to take over next? Fine Gael infighting. Now, if that actually affects the operation of government, then I think all of us, including my own party, and all of us in the Dáil would have, you know, then the situation becomes actually much more acute and more serious than whether it's Leo or Simon or Francis or whoever takes over from Enda Kenny. Because, you know, what the Taoiseach mentions is true in one respect. We have very serious issues with regard to Brexit, Article 50 being triggered, no assembly in the North, our negotiating position with our EU partners in relation to Brexit. So we can't have a government that is just looking in on itself about who's going to lead Fine Gael. So that's something that Fine Gael want to be very wary about.
Well, what did you think when you heard him saying that?
Well, I think he doesn't want, like we all know he doesn't want to go. What it says to me, I was reading on RT News website there today, is that apparently there's an EPP, European People's Party conference now
in May,
in Dublin, that Enda has been invited to speak at. So look, you can always find a date not to go if you don't want to. But that's up to them. But it appears to me that he said he would make his views clear when he returned. And maybe he will. He'll say, guys, I'm coming back, but I've got to wait till September, October. Who knows? But they got to figure it out one way or the other, because it's not all about Fine Gael. Like, they're supposed to be in a position of actually, you know, running their departments and the real important issues for people out there.
Okay, can I just bring Kevin in before we hear from the rest of the panel? Because, Kevin, you spoke to the, you say in the paper, the Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney camps in advance of the paper being published today. What did they say to you about what was said in New York?
Yeah, they were a bit reticent, Claire, to go all out, all guns blazing on the situation. But there was a view from both sides, a very similar view, that, look, this won't wash. We can't go through another fake deadline being set and it being pushed out and pushed out and pushed out. Suddenly we're at the summer, suddenly we're at the budget. And a bit like what Dara said there is always something that will take precedence over this in terms of world events or domestic events. And the view was it has to come to a head at some stage. They weren't quite saying we'll push, but I think the vibe is that if Mr. Kenny doesn't come up with a definitive deadline, a definitive date, something will have to happen that might be outside his control.
Okay, Father Tobin?
I suppose it looks like the Duracell Taoiseach is looking to buy more time on this issue. And the problem I have with regards to that, it's immaterial to me who actually leads Fine Gael. But the problem is when we have this open revolt within Fine Gael, when we have the Taoiseach of ducking and diving with regards to what's happening, it kicks issues like housing and health off the agenda politically and media-wise. So we're in a massive crisis right through the state. I don't have to say that. People know that. And yet we're likely to be focused on this for another few weeks. So I think Fine Gael need to get their act together, sort it out, and decide who they want to lead them in the future.
Noel Whelan, you think that Enda shouldn't have gone to the United States at all?
Well, no, I think that we should have a certainty about what's going on, about who's leading the country. Because this time last year we had a caretaker government. We now, this time, for another few months, weeks, it seems, now going to have a caretaker government. But I think we can take Kevin's report in two parts. The first, I think, is it's worth saying that Enda Kenny did brilliantly in America. I mean, this programme would be dominated about it. If he had misstepped, this programme would be dominated about a discussion about that. So let's start by saying he went to America facing a very difficult diplomatic and political challenge. But he had to, in a sense, not be rude to his hosts. We might not like it, but America is currently run by a Trump-led, Republican-dominated government. He had to appeal and reassure the mass of Irish America that he respected that decision, but also respected the fact that many of them, on the Democratic side in particular, disagreed with it. And he had to be careful with his audience at home. And he managed to do all that very well, very carefully, and quite effectively. I mean, he was assertive without being rude. I think Shane Ross and Finian McGrath Fionnuala McGrath, I think, was it on this programme, told us notwithstanding cabinet confidentiality that Shane Ross had opposed it at the cabinet meeting, now having it on their face. I think Brendan Howland's interview with Morning Ireland yesterday morning was as if he hadn't heard what Enda Kenny said, not just at the Capitol Hill, but also later that night at the reception. Mm-hmm. And they got it wrong, and Enda Kenny got it right. And I think we should stop.
Well, there will always be those who would have wanted him to go further. You know, yes, there's a whole campaign.
There will, but he reminded people of just, I mean, how good he is when he's performing that type of role as the Taoiseach and the head of our government. And that was absolutely an incredibly difficult job, as Noel is alluding to,
But before Colm Corrie is that over, you see, this is why I say let's take it in two parts.
No, but
Enda Kenny has always done Irish America very well, and I don't just mean at those big crowd events, but in the boardrooms of America when he's looking for international investment, and he has been at many levels a very effective Taoiseach. What he misses at times is he's missed the ability, particularly in the last couple of years, to read the public mood. This, as I keep saying, people focus on whether he needs to be pushed or whether he's going to jump. The political ground has fallen away from Enda Kenny. Firstly, during the election, now more than a year ago, when Fine Gael lost a large number of seats and where people didn't expect he would be their Taoiseach after that election. And secondly, in the events arising from these conflict of meetings with Catherine Sapone and conflicting accounts of meetings about Catherine Sapone and others. The ground has fallen away from him. So let's just get it on over and done with. Would Fine Gael ever just get on? In its own interest, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. In its own interest, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. Get it on. There is an EPP meeting in May. There's an All-Ireland in September. There's a budget in October.
It's Christmas.
You can pick any event you want. When you're gone, you're gone. When the power base falls away from you, it's fallen away from you. It's time to move on and sort out what happens
lots
next.
Lots of comments on this. Nuala in Dublin says it's very sad to see Enda Kenny losing his dignity in the leadership issue by using Stormont and Brexit to feed his political life support tube. Very sad indeed. I'm a long-standing member of Fine Gael, says Mary O'Brien. I'm totally fed up with the position of Enda Kenny. He has caused this himself by stating he would not lead into the next election if he wanted to stay. He should never have said that. I feel now he needs to be pushed if he won't go himself with dignity. Alison, did you think he was saying, I'm staying around?
I think that he is playing the most masterful psychological mind games with the boys. You know, it's like he is dangling their chains left, right and centre. And because he has set it up in such a way that it's almost embarrassing for them to pretend that they want to be the next leader of Fine Gael, they nearly have to sit there mutely and take it. I mean, it's fascinating to watch that politically. And all this talk we've had over the years that Enda Kenny has no ego and that, I think we see now, you know, that he may not display it in other ways, but we've seen over the last couple of months that Enda has an exceptionally robust ego and really does believe in his own PR, if you like. But you only have to look at the poll results last weekend, which showed that Sinn Féin ahead of Fine Gael, to show the damage that's been done to the party, and that it's sort of sad in a way for the incredible work Enda Kenny did over the last 15 years to bring Fine Gael back, admittedly not at last year's election, but that the way he's staying on now really is doing a lot of damage to the party. But I would agree with Noel that he did exceptionally well in the US this week, as well as he possibly could have been expected to do.
Do you ever get a sense that the international media are saying, oh, he's great, he did really well, he's the only
he's
one who's
always been
and
more
the rest
appreciated.
Of us at home are going, he's terrible, he's awful.
He's always been more appreciated abroad. But just, I just want to finish this point. One point we haven't touched on yet, and actually Kevin does in his lead story this morning. It's fascinating, the approach that Trump took. Devoted so much of the day to Patrick's Day, attended so many events, had his first public event around St. Patrick's Day, had people invited. He hasn't done that since he became president, and that he centred so much around Ireland and St. Patrick's Day and was so warm and so welcoming. And Kevin says in his lead story today about this idea of him maybe making us some sort of a go-to place. Which is quite scary, really.
A lot of Trump voters, whether we like it or not, a lot of people who voted for Trump were Irish Americans.
It's a big constituency.
And they know that. Enda Kenny alluded to 35 million. It's probably closer to 40.
Sorry, Colin. Yeah.
closer to Irish heritage. So I think Trump knows what he's doing. I think all of us, if you look at how Enda Kenny performed over the last couple of days, I would say I thought he did as well as he could in those, and I thought he did well actually in getting the message across. I was one, unlike the Labour Party and the Greens, who thought he shouldn't have gone, which was a ridiculous position to be, because it would have been a complete insult, not to Donald Trump, but to the American people, to the office of the presidency, and would have done nothing to serve our country in any way, bar negatively. So I think credit where credit's due. I think he did a good job when he was in the States.
And I think it was very surprising to hear. You'll always hear, there's a certain percentage of people will always believe that you should basically shout across the Atlantic and that, you know, that Trump is the incarnate of evil. But what we have to remember as a country is that the relationship between Ireland and therefore Ireland EU and the United States is so crucial. Enda Kenny showed quite clearly in the success of that trip that he's just carried out that he really is incredibly good at representing our country.
I spent a lot of my youth working in Fianna Fáil, so I've seen the anatomy of leadership crisis across the 80s enough to know that there could be one of two things going on. There is always hurt. When people come after a leader, he is always hurt. And sometimes he was trying to put distance between the time they came at him or after him or threatened a motion and his actual going. So he comes in. But he may be at something else. He may be trying to punish those he perceives as being responsible for doing that. He may be trying to shape the outcome of the succession. But also, the longer this drags on, it seems to me, the less it helps Leo Varadkar. And Enda Kenny may be, and some people around him, may be actually playing with the next phase rather than just the timing of his own.
Interesting. Heather Tobin, just, then we're going to leave this.
Yeah, in a way, the pretenders to the throne in Fine Gael have been weakened because they've marched their 10,000 men to the top of the hill already and then had a parliamentary party meeting and then none of them wanted to actually say a word at whatsoever. So they can't keep doing that without losing face on it. But one of the points that struck me with regards to Enda's statement, he said, until we have a Brexit strategy in place. Now, why is there no Brexit strategy in place at this stage, that we're actually on the precipice of Article 50 being triggered, and yet the Taoiseach says we are still waiting for our state to have a Brexit strategy in place?
Was he referring to our state, or was he referring to the UK?
Absolutely, he was. That's misleading, Patrick. You know it's misleading to say. You do know it's misleading.
At the very start of this process, we've said that, like Spain to a certain extent, that Ireland should have had a memorandum of understanding.
You're moving on to another topic now. I don't want to do that before the break. We made that point. Okay, Kevin Doyle in the United States, thank you very much for joining us from Independent News and Media. We'll take a break and talk about a united Ireland after this. Okay, welcome back to the programme. In the studio today, we have Heather Tobin from Sinn Féin, Dara O'Brien from Fianna Fáil, Colin Brophy, Fine Gael, Noel Whelan, Irish Times columnist and barrister, and Alison O'Connor, who's a columnist with The Examiner. Alison, I'm going to start with you because I'm interested to know what your view of Fianna Fáil's plans to publish a roadmap for United Ireland are, what your views are of that. It's all, I suppose, risen to the surface now because of Brexit.
Well, I think it is clever politics on the part of Fianna Fáil. I think it shows how Fianna Fáil spends so much of its time now looking over its shoulder at Sinn Féin. I think that listening to the interviews that I know Micheál Martin did an interview in the Irish Times, and then I heard him give a number of broadcast interviews, and I thought he spoke with good emotional intelligence on it, I thought, because he, you know, saying he'd been asked would this happen in your lifetime and how he didn't like that question. So, I mean, quite clearly, you're talking, and even he's thinking about a long time. And I think a long time is, I know there's been massive change even in the last couple of months, even with the election 2 weeks ago, the incredibly successful election on the part of Sinn Féin and their new leader in the north, setting an extraordinarily high bar, I think, for someone who was hardly taken over a wet week and having that kind of a result. But I think that it's, you know, the peace process is a long time in place now, but it's only every couple of months that we're reminded of the tensions that so much has changed, but so many tensions still exist, that it's very, very hard to imagine, I believe, a united Ireland, even in my lifetime, in terms of how that would happen without a significant, they may be in a minority then, but with a significant section of the population not dragged absolutely kicking and screaming.
So,
but I think it's clever politics.
Yeah.
On the part
so,
of
so the point. So Fianna Fáil's plan to publish this roadmap, is it opportunistic or is it responsible?
Yeah, a bit of both, maybe. You know,
God, that's as kind as I thought we'd get from Alison on that. The reality of it is, look, that.
But are you always looking over your shoulder, Sinn Féin? Is that
no?
What
well,
we've
look. If you go back,
you're for, a way out of that, Derry. You're cricking your necks from
Alison. Not because I know you wrote about that consistently in 2011, 2012, 13.
Well, I'm glad I have consistency going on.
That Sinn Féin were going to, you know, overtake Fianna Fáil and all these type of things, and that didn't materialise and it didn't happen. Some people were very disappointed that didn't happen. But the reality of it is that
could yes,
it could. Absolutely, but it hasn't as of now, and we have a job to present our own policies, and a core goal of Fianna Fáil has always been the reunification and the unity of the country. Now, this wasn't something that was just announced last week. This was actually back in August 2016 where Micheál mentioned this first, and we've been working on a detailed white paper and publish that over the next few weeks, because I think really we've got to get to a stage whereby, and I'd agree with some of what Alison said, it's not as simple as, you know, saying we're going to have a border poll and it's going to happen next week. But a united Ireland has to be looked at as a real option, particularly in this post-Brexit world. And I think when you look at from 1998 onwards and the progress that has been made under the Good Friday Agreement, but in many instances, a lot of the potential that the Good Friday Agreement gave, particularly on an all-Ireland basis, hasn't been realised. And there's many of the all-Ireland bodies in particular haven't actually, because governments, and particularly the last one and the current Tory government, haven't actually wanted to see that potential develop. So what we're about is actually showing, look, here's what a united Ireland could look like. Here's what we'll mean in education, in justice, transport, health. Here's what the cost may be. How would the transition happen? So that there's actually quite a detailed debate, because the more people you talk to, and I spend a lot of time in the North as well and in Britain, is that there are people in the North looking for leadership from Dublin on this, because they don't feel that they're getting leadership through the Assembly, and particularly because the British Prime Minister has effectively ignored the devolved assemblies and their wishes coming through Brexit. And we've got to remember that the majority of people in the North voted Remain. So we have a duty of care, and a fundamental part of that is that the North be afforded a special status, which the Dáil voted on. The government, Fine Gael, opposed it, I might add. But so it's not opportunistic. It isn't. It's a political paper. Absolutely it is, for political discussion. Okay. And that's what we intend to do. And we want all people feeding into it.
I welcome Fianna Fáil coming into this debate,
absolutely,
big style.
Yeah.
And I actually welcome the fact that they're going to stand in the local elections in
that's
the North.
That's what you plan to do in 2019.
In 2019. I think that's fantastic as well. And I actually hope you win seats in that election, believe it or not. I was participated with James Brokenshire in the negotiations in the North last Tuesday. And he couched all his discussions around need for compromise. And I put it to him that...
What's he like? Does he do the waffle, waffle, waffle that your leader in the North said?
Well, I felt that he was very much to the script and the repetition of the script over and over again with regards, trying to deviate and getting down into the detail. But, like, we put him to the point that how could you have compromise on all these other issues, yet on the issue of having the North in a customs union, there was absolutely no compromise from London. On the issue of having the North in a single market, absolutely no compromise. And it's really important to understand that these are urgent issues in the North. In the same way they're urgent issues in Edinburgh and Glasgow, it's really important that the North be allowed to remain inside these particular spaces. And if they don't remain inside these particular economic and social and political spaces, well, then there has to be a step taken on.
Do you believe, given that you're involved in those talks, that the common travel area will be something that can be worked out, but it is all of the issues around trade that will provide the biggest problem?
I think around the common travel area, what's likely to happen is that the border will then move to the island of Britain. So in other words, when people leave the one island to another, they will be checked, etc. for passports.
Vetting, as they call.
But the one point I just want to pick up with Alison said, and I understand obviously that people would be cautious about moving from this fantastic peace that we have now. But in the Troubles, we were told that you can't work for a united Ireland only peacefully. And now it's peaceful, and we're working towards a united Ireland. We're told you can't work for a united Ireland peacefully because it could cause conflict. In the Troubles, we were saying you can't force a united Ireland on the majority. Now that unionism is no longer the majority, you say, well, 50% plus one is not good enough. You have to have nearly majority consent from the unionist community as well. You can't keep changing the posts
right
with regards
to this.
It's
right that a proper discussion
and
happens on this.
And I think the point is, let the people say, why be so fearful around the people on the island of Ireland actually having a particular say on this, as they did in Scotland a number of weeks ago. And I think that the election gone past is probably one of the most important elections I have ever seen. What we're seeing is we're seeing the landscape radically changed in the north. And there's a really good article in the Times during the week, and it said to a certain extent that the southern establishment have missed what's happening in the north because they're more interested in arresting the development of Sinn Féin than actually seeing that demographically and even around Brexit, we have people who are now switched on to the logic of simply having one market, reducing the duplication. There's 26 government departments on the island of Ireland. There's three tourism bodies on the island of Ireland. There's, you know, every the health service is doubled.
I think it's the approach. I hear what you, but the approach is that the urgent issue now is Ireland and the Republic as well, and how we deal with Brexit and the effects of Brexit. A lot of play, and I was in Brussels last week, relates to the border.
That Fianna Fáil are going to waste time floating proposals just to...
Can I just ask a question? I know, but I just want to try and clarify this before we bring more people in. Is it that you're saying your approach brings unionism along with you because it's softly, Sinn Féin does not?
That'd be a fair analysis of it. I think what we need to show is good cause for all people on the island as we approach Brexit and the risks that affect people in the south, by the way. 59 billion euro worth of trade east-west, 1 billion north-south. So, you know, we've got to keep that in context. And in Brussels, there's an understanding of the border issue. And they do, and I'm quite confident there's an understanding there. What's not understood, as much as it should be, though, is the reliance and the interdependence between Ireland and Britain on trade and the hundreds of thousands of jobs that are actually underpinned by that. And that's what worries me. I'm just concerned that Europe will say, do you know what, the CTA... the border, fine, we've got that sorted, and nothing else. So no state aid supports, no supports for trade, all of that. So we've got to show good cause by an all-Ireland approach. And if that brings people along, great, but it shouldn't be by way of an ulterior motive. Mm. The feeling I get with Sinn Féin is that because they announce a border poll, they're frightening people into it. They say, well, if you do this, you know, and then you talk about dragging
people the problem really is the ulterior motive, and that's really what I think is so disappointing out of what we're listening to, because even when Dara tries to be, you know, so measured and so level and so reasonable, at the end of it, he can't resist the temptation to have that little swipe at Sinn Féin, because really what you see on a regular basis is that Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin are now engaged in a type of daily boxing match with each other,
as opposed to within your own party, Fianna Fáil are absolutely fixated
on the rise of Sinn Féin and the possibility of what Sinn Féin will do to their vote. So what you have is the most type of opportunist use, I think, of the north, and I have no doubt. By the way, Sorry, Dara. Listen, come here. Just give it a second. What you'll have, I have no doubt, on this is not only will you have this taken out now, but every couple of months, if they see a situation where they want to position themselves vis-à-vis Sinn Féin, they'll take it out again. They're quite willing, in my opinion, to use it in a way that really undermines the heart of, which is the only thing Dara started to allude to there, which is really critical, is we need at this point to focus everybody's attention on where we are as an island in relation to Brexit and in relation to dealing with the negotiations that are going to come up. What we're going to have, unfortunately, Fianna Fáil play politics with everything, because that's just in their nature.
I was lucky enough to be able to be the rapporteur for the All-Ireland Economy document last year. It was the first time there was an All-Ireland Economy document ever created since partition in the Oireachtas. It's incredible. But the point, I spoke to over 100 different organisations, the CBI, the northern version of IBEC, IBEC themselves, all the different trade unions, farmers, etc. All of them said when we plan, fund and deliver on the island of Ireland together, it's far more efficient and better for everybody in society. And that hasn't even started yet.
No, Whelan.
I mean, stop the presses. Politicians are being political about an issue. Of course they are. Of course they are. That's the reality.
So be honest and say it.
There's a very easy way to solve that. There needs to be a national lead on it. And the government are the ones who, with all of the parties, should then be taking a national lead on this. There's a very good piece today by Paul Gillespie in the Irish Times where he talks about we live in accelerating times. Everything is speeding up. Mm-hmm. He quotes the Lenin quote that nothing happens for decades and then decades happen in years. We are literally, such are the shifts constitutionally within the United Kingdom, in and around the European Union, that they are inevitably having a consequence on accelerating trends that demography and other things are driving on the island of Ireland. In my view, it is now no longer fanciful to talk about a united Ireland. It is legitimate. Let's be very clear. Just because some soiled the cause of Irish unity or Irish republicanism by seeking to enforce it down the barrel of a gun and in many ways a sectarian campaign doesn't mean that we need to reassert the fact that it is legitimate. The cause of united Ireland is a legitimate. It is now also post-Brexit probably the most logical and practical outcome of the mess that will be on this island without it in the medium term. And it's not time for a border poll, but it is time for careful, detailed, government-led, in my view, national and cross-party analysis that would assess what are the modalities. Because here's the mistake that was made around the Brexit poll, for example. Everybody said, let's have a Brexit poll, but the British didn't think out what that would mean. Mm-hmm. There is no reason, in my view, why the best constitutional minds in this country, on this island, the best economic minds on this island and indeed the neighbouring island, and the best political and historical, people who can see it in the political and historical lens, can't begin to frame and shape how united Ireland would happen. It would have a couple of functions. I mean, there's a crude element of what Fianna Fáil is, that is, it's trying to de-shinnerise the campaign for united Ireland. And they're right to do that because, as Matt Carty, I think, put it well, I spoke as one of the external speakers at a Sinn Féin conference on Irish unity at the end of January, and he said, Irish unity will not be achieved without Sinn Féin. He's correct, but he went on to say Irish unity will not be achieved by Sinn Féin. It has to be by much more than that.
Because Leo Varadkar was speaking about this on Thursday, and he said what the Fianna Fáil move, along with what Sinn Féin have always done, is alienate unionists, cause enormous fear among unionists who are still half the population.
But unionism is in an insecure, and vulnerable place. That is not because other people are talking about a united Ireland. It's because they've suddenly waken up the fact that Britain doesn't give a damn about them.
That's true.
That but what's happening in and around Brexit is not in their interest. I mean, there's an opinion poll in Britain today that says more people in Britain would be prepared to forego Scottish unity with Britain rather than forego Brexit. I mean, the way Britain has gone...
But that's the heart of what Leo was saying, and it's the most important aspect of what Leo was alluding to there.
But Leo also suggested that if unionists could still get to send their children on Erasmus courses, that somehow would solve
But if you look at a community which is feeling particularly vulnerable at this moment in time, you have to ask what is the best way of trying to work with them. And, you know, using a topic politically is not doing that.
It is said in our politics at the moment, and that when you look at the opinion polls and all that, that even if we had an election in the morning, and maybe you might have Fianna Fáil where Fine Gael is now, that ultimately our politics wouldn't change. I think there's one key area where our politics would change, and that would be the North. That Fianna Fáil have a better instinct for it. And we've seen that since Fine Gael came in, that it's kind of ironic to see the Taoiseach mentioning this as something in New York yesterday about, sure, how can I go? My God, the Northern Ireland executive. He doesn't have an instinct for it. I think he attempts to muster up enthusiasm, and but it's just not there. There's always that sense of drift. I think that is something that if there were a Fianna Fáil Taoiseach, I believe that would significantly change.
Okay. Padraig, and then Dara will let you in.
If Fine Gael are against the idea of a border poll, well, then the other option would be a statist approach to it. So in other words, you'd develop the All-Ireland institutions that are already there. You'd even look for the devolution of more power from London to Belfast, so the All-Ireland economy could be deepened and strengthened. But we don't even have any movement on that whatsoever.
Padraig, do you not think, even if you had, for what Noel was saying, that even if you had a drift approach now, that the way things are going, things happening so quickly with Brexit and everything, that actually what is happening externally and how that impacts on the North could be the best thing that could ever happen, your cause, over the next couple of years, rather than scaring people.
I don't think the destruction of the Irish economy is a good way to try and achieve the unity of Ireland. There are certain things we have absolutely no control over.
I'm not suggesting that we don't do our absolute best. I'm just suggesting that circumstances
And no one is suggesting that this happens overnight either, right? And what the reality of it is, I'd agree with Noel on this, is this is a real option, and it's not about scaring the unionist community. We engage a lot. I engage a lot with the unionist community in the North. Many of us colleagues do. Cross-border businesses, employers that are North and South, daily interaction through sport, all different things, because of Good Friday, have normalised those type of things. What we're looking at now is a threat that that will be rolled back upon, that some of that progress will be lost. And it is true to say, and I would say it is, that a Fine Gael-led government, this one and the last one, took a laissez-faire attitude towards the North. Absolutely. Weren't in
but
tune.
But who's saying things are going to be rolled back on? Why are you saying, that any
of
that?
A hard
well, because if the Brexit...
If
oh, sorry, in terms of Brexit. Sorry, I thought you were talking about terms of Fine Gael.
Already
yeah, yeah.
To that. Mm. The British yeah. government already unilaterally acting to remove elements from the Good Friday yeah. Agreement already, which is an international agreement between both countries, with their great repeal bill. That's going to affect mm-hmm. some of the things that we have done. So we've got to watch that.
One listener says, does anyone consider that Northerners mightn't want our penal taxes, getting practically nothing for PRSI, woeful awesome. Hospital and housing waiting yeah. lists, etc. Which you could add to that, do we want their public sector pay bill? Do we want their pension bill? Who pays for the subvention?
I mean, this idea, there was something it was suggested during the week in this Irish Times series that the British could be persuaded for a couple of years to keep up this. How much is the subvention? How many billion
nobody's
a year
to the
North? I mean, who? Is it 10 or 20 billion? I mean, really and truly, but, can you imagine suggesting that notion to British voters?
But the subvention, the public sector...
Noel, we'll just hear from Noel.
The Whitehall subvention, the London subvention for Northern Ireland's economy is our problem anyway. Whether whoever picks up the bill, and that the need to restructure and transform Northern Ireland's economy is going to have to happen in the short and medium term. And in some ways, it's part of what's causing the tensions up there between the parties on being able to govern, because some of the parties are not prepared to sign up for the welfare restructuring and others that the British government are talking about. I just think that the ground has shifted. There has been a dramatic shift.
So when will it happen?
Well, in some ways, if you wanted to do pure headcount, then you could say it could happen in about 15 years. But that isn't the solution either. And nor can you, nor will you get to a situation, there will always be unionists and many unionists who will oppose United Ireland. Mm. But they can't be given a veto on the consent principle either.
What
all have now signed up to is the consent principle. Mm. And if that can be got to a point, not now, but on some occasions soon. But the key thing is that we don't make the same mistake at Brexit, that you have the referendum first and then figure out
if Britain leaving the European Union, it is as difficult as we all think it will be, and certainly because the European Union line will be to protect the European Union, and I get that and I agree with them. So it's not going to be an easy exit for Britain at all. If that has a further detrimental effect on the north of Ireland and the citizens in the north, who only account for 3% of the UK population, you will see a different reality dawning in 5 to 10 years. And that's what I think we've got to be prepared
for. Okay, just really briefly, and we're going to finish on this.
Here's an example. NERTA, which is the retail organisation in the north, and Retail Excellence Ireland, went to the Fine Gael Minister for Enterprise and sought that there'd be an all-Ireland forum on retail, because they identified €700 million that could be achieved by better integration at retail. The Fine Gael government said, no, we don't want to get involved in that whatsoever. If there's a problem, and I agree that the subvention issue is very hard to deal with because nobody knows for sure exactly how much it is, but some of the money that actually is money that goes in Trident, the military spending in Britain. Corporation taxes that are paid in the north are not actually included. They're actually included in London's collection of taxes. But why don't the government even start about standardising the collection of economic data so that we do start to make the whole process more transparent?
You're not trying to make out that the subvention is not absolutely so huge. That
there is a large subvention there. I'm not arguing that point. I think if you can't measure, you can't manage. And if it's so difficult to see how much it is,
bringing in Trident
and you're not
and everything
prepared to
else
start,
into it at this point,
there's a difficulty.
The problem is, and I did hear Alison's point earlier in the week. I think it was Micheál Martin is part of Fianna Fáil's ideas that Britain should pay for Northern Ireland for years after.
There will have to be an extra payment.
If you have a situation where that subvention that problem cannot be addressed, then it
what's
makes,
your plans, Colin?
It makes the whole question of well,
name one initiative that Fine Gael have developed around this.
We're going to leave that there. What has emerged from that is that Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin kind of agree. Let's take a break. Colin Brophy, I'm going to start with you on this, because Daniel McConnell in The Examiner today says the Public Accounts Committee was badly damaged last week by the shameful and disgraceful partisanship of Fine Gael members of the committee who sought to tear down a damning report into NAMA and Finance Minister Michael Noonan from within. What do you say?
I don't accept that at all. I actually think, and I've said this before, I don't think it's just a matter with the Public Accounts Committee. I think with a number of Dáil committees there is a problem, in that I think that people are going in to the committee with an ideological lock, where they're starting the work in such a way that they are moving towards what is nearly a predetermined outcome in their mind.
Is this a new phenomenon, do you think?
I think it's got worse. I think it's got worse
new
as
politics.
Part of, I hate that term, but as part of that new politics thing, I think it's got worse, because whatever about the way in which the PAC functioned in the past, I think when you have a situation where you really do not have committees able to deliver because you just cannot get agreement out of them. And I think if you cannot get a workable consensus agreement, it does call into question the investigative side, particularly of committees. I mean, I was involved in a committee at the start of this Dáil's life. It's not nonsense. It's very clear.
Where we worked
for months and months and months to see people walk out at the end of it because they wouldn't agree with what was the majority view of that committee.
So that's the point I'm going to make.
Is it's becoming very, very difficult to see that these committees will ever come to unanimous agreement, because there's just too much difference.
Right. Colm has a point. The real serious thing here with the PAC, this is the first time the PAC has ever divided in a vote since its foundation. That is really serious. Now, if you want to talk about partisanship, the only people who dissented from the report were the Fine Gael members. Why did they dissent? Because
Let's get it correct.
Can you actually imagine Michael Noonan gives 5 hours of evidence to the Public Accounts Committee and doesn't feel it appropriate to mention the fact that the day before the closing days on the purchase and Cerebras's bid on the Northern Ireland loans, that he doesn't feel it appropriate to say, by the way, do you know what, I met the chairperson of Cerebras. You know, it's nuts. It's crazy. So
He wasn't asked.
So no, but 5 hours of
that's what he said.
I know.
It's public knowledge. You might as well make this point as well, Dara.
Look,
it's public knowledge that he met them.
Do you actually believe, and does the Minister for Finance believe, that that wasn't an important point that he should have mentioned? Now, the PAC have issued their report, and let's look at the fundamental aspects of that report as well. And it has actually found some very serious shortcomings in the sale process in NAMA, and this isn't the first time. So that is a serious thing, and it's a pity. It's a terrible shame, actually, that the PAC divided on it, because the Public Accounts
Committee... Because all that was lost because of the row over Michael
Absolutely.
Newman.
Okay. And the fundamental...
I have to move on.
You could accuse Sean Fleming a lot of things in life, but you could hardly accuse him of being an ideologue. He's probably one of the most least partisan of politicians. Mm-hmm. And the Public Accounts Committee has managed to do that over the years. I think Fine Gael should have just taken the hit. Michael Noonan should not have met Cerebras. It emphasised in the report nothing inappropriate was done at that meeting. Yes. So the issue wasn't discussed at the meeting, but the very fact of the meeting was inappropriate. You can pick an adjective somewhere on that spectrum and just get on with it.
Yeah, to me there's a Caesar's wife element about it being seen to be above reproach. One of the things I found very interesting, one of the things put forward was, look, this guy John Snow, you know, he's a former Treasury Secretary, the head of what's really important. Does that not get to the heart of exactly why these people are appointed to these kind of jobs?
Exactly.
You know, so that they open doors. And it's a really rotten thing about the system.
Absolutely. Like, I can't believe that NAMA is still functioning and that nobody in NAMA has had to answer questions, you know, with regards heads rolling on this particular issue. I know there are allegations, but there's serious allegations of insider trading. There's allegations that we have people like Frank Cushnahan involved in teeing up particular vulture funds, along with DUP ministers, and meeting and phoning Michael Noonan, and then NAMA going to offices in Belfast and letting them know what's actually happening, even though these people were actually the organisers of these particular
Unfortunately,
issues.
We're out of time. I know that topic deserved more time, but unfortunately we're up against the clock because we have to make room for the news and then Callan's kick switch follows. Thank you all very much indeed for coming in today, and I will be on television on Monday night at 10:35. Hope you can join me on RT1. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. The researcher, John Riley. And sound supervision was by Sheila Nivuil. And coming up after the break, it's Callan's Kicks.
RTE Radio 1.